You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Hemophilia is a genetic disorder that reduces or prevents blood from clotting properly. It affects males in greater numbers, and until the 1960s, the average life expectancy of someone with a severe case of hemophilia was only at about 11 years old. Well, today, gene science allows for a relatively normal life as long as you have treatment. Joining me live in studio to talk more about blood disorders is Barbara Fawcett. She is the executive director of the Idaho chapter of the National Hemophilia Foundation. And Zach Walker, the director of Camp Red Sunrise. It is a camp for families coping with blood disorders. And Zach has hemophilia himself. Welcome to the program, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Barbara, I'd like to start with you. And when we talk about blood disorders, what does that encompass?
It encompasses a great deal more than just hemophilia. That's what we put our emphasis on. But there are many different. There's something called von Willebrand's that is something that women have more often than men. Hemophilia is usually for young boys. Von Willebrand's is more young boys, but also girls.
And are those the two main types of blood disorders that we see, or are there many more than that?
There are more, but those are predominantly the more that you see in the population, yeah.
So when we talk about hemophilia, it's that it's the inability for the body to really clot.
Correct.
Blood, correct. Correct. So Zach, how did you find out that you had this, or do you remember? Even?
Well, I don't remember
right.
how they found out, just from stories I'd heard from my parents. This was a new experience to our family. Although it's a genetic, in my family, it had not manifested itself before I was born. So my parents had no idea to be expecting that. And that can happen. There's some estimates that may happen one out of three families that are affected by hemophilia. So that's definitely what happened with us. And so I and two of my brothers have hemophilia and two do not.
So how did your parents find out? Did you get a cut or something like that?
I bruise a little easier as a child. You know, the bruises don't heal up as quick or more bleeding. If a male is circumcised, then the bleeding is harder to stop.
That.
Yeah. And so that can be kind of a trigger for the medical professionals that, you know, there's something wrong with bleeding and we need to test.
And so as I read before, though, up until the 1960s, you're looking at an average lifespan of only like 11 years or so. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting here as an adult. So we've seen a lot more treatment that works.
Yeah, the treatments have significantly become better throughout my lifetime, especially I was born in 1973. The treatments then were better than what they had been in the past, which is where that life expectancy, that low life expectancy had come from. They just didn't have the types of treatments that allowed them to live pretty much normal type of lives.
And what is the treatment like?
Well, today, so me growing up, we treated on demand.
Okay.
So it's a replacement of the factor that you're missing in your blood that's causing the clotting to not happen or not happen as fast as it should. So when I was a kid, we treated on demand. I mean, it's a joint swells up or you're having an internal bleed somewhere or a cut somewhere. And usually it's internal bleeding, not cuts.
Okay, I was just going to say.
They're the problem.
Okay, because that's the thing too. So I guess that could be a real problem.
Yes.
Then. So you don't even know sometimes if you've bumped into something or something has happened and you have an internal bleed.
Yeah, part of growing up with hemophilia is learning how to identify an internal bleed. A cut's easy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you have to learn how to identify, is my joint feeling a little warmer? Is there this kind of tingly feeling that's different? So that you can you were trying to nip it in the bud by because we're only treating on demand at that time. Of letting your parents or your medical professionals know that, hey, I need an infusion. Today, though, the treatment is different. We try to treat prophylactically, where patients are actually infusing a couple times a week or once every 7 to 14 days, depending on the product that they're taking. But the idea behind that now is that we're proactively trying to prevent those bleeds, because the bleed causes damage to your joints. And so if you're not being proactive about it, well, you're going to create damage, which then becomes even more costly later in life. I ended up having to get both knees replaced here just about 9 years ago.
So just like in your 30s, having to go through something like that.
Yeah. And that was simply because I had had so much of that bleeding occurring in my knees as a child and a teenager that it had eaten away pretty much the cartilage out of both of my knees by the time I was in my 30s.
So, Barbara, this is fascinating because I think for the average person, I mean, we've heard of hemophilia and you think, you know, I knew that, oh, if you get a cut, it doesn't clot. But I have to say, I think unless you walk in this world, does the average person not fully understand what this disease looks like?
They really don't. They've read about it in books. They've heard various characters that
we hear about the royal disease.
The royal disease. But on the whole, the average person doesn't know what it is. It's inherited. And I think the one thing I keep pushing is there's no cure for this. You've got it for the rest of your life. Now, right now, they're doing some gene therapy, which looks promising, but nobody's going on to that quite yet. So it goes with you for the rest of your life. The other thing that we like to tell people to make them aware of is that the average cost for Factor, as Zach said, can be about $300,000 a year.
A year?
Per patient.
Oh, my goodness.
So if you've got a family.
Well, like in Zach's family, you said you have, three of you?
I had two brothers, yeah, so three of us that had it.
You can imagine the cost for the people that are trying to deal with this. It's real tough if you don't have insurance through a workplace. It's real tough.
And about how many people suffer from a blood disorder?
So estimates on the Center for Disease Control website are, and this data is probably outdated a little bit. I think I've read the same number for the last 10 years. But it's estimated 1 in 5,000 are affected by hemophilia. So that means there's probably, they're saying 20,000 patients in the country. You know, and if you do the math, then it's about 150 patients then probably here in Idaho, plus or minus. Von Willebrand's disease, though, has very similar symptoms to hemophilia, because it does affect one of the clotting factors. But it's estimated there's many more affected by that. People don't get diagnosed as easily for von Willebrand's disease unless they have severe symptoms, severe bleeding. So quite often, and it was believed that it was mainly a female
disease
at one point, because that's predominantly females. Once they hit their teenage years, that's when they find out, oh, they're bleeding more than other patients. So we find out, they've got von Willebrand's. Well, we're finding out, no, it's probably equally affecting males and females as well. A lot of people don't get diagnosed for it.
I'm speaking with Barbara Fawcett. She's the executive director of the Idaho chapter of the National Hemophilia Foundation, and Zach Walker, director of Camp Red Sunrise. He's a hemophiliac himself. So, Zach, talk to me about this camp.
Okay.
Yeah, because
love to.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite topics.
Okay, let's talk about it. So, it's for families and kiddos.
Yeah, so it's for families in Idaho that are affected by a bleeding disorder, and we have a 3-day camp where we have kids of all ages come up with their parents, and we've had grandparents come as well. It's 3 days to really get people together that have similar diagnosis so they can learn that they're not alone. That's always my favorite thing. One of the first years at camp, a young kid told his mother, "I didn't know there was any other hemophiliacs."
Aww.
You know, and you're like, well, that's why we're having camp.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of the goal of bleeding disorder camps, because we're just one of many throughout the country, is to help the patients and their families learn how to cope better with the bleeding disorder. But and when I say cope, I don't just mean emotionally, but also the physical things I have to do. Like when I was 8 years old, I went to camp, and that's where I learned how to self-infuse. Well, that gives me a little more independence in my life, mm-hmm. right? Because if me and my family can infuse, well, then we can go do what we want. Until you learn that, you're stuck. You have to go right. to the hospital to get that done or have a home infusion therapy come. So that was a big part of camp for me as a kid. Well, we still do that today. It's still a big part. We have a big stick award if you're a bleeding disorder patient and you've learned how to infuse the first time at camp. Well, then we give you this award as kind of a, yeah. you know, this.
Like yeah. you did it. You did
yeah,
it.
You did it. And now you can be more independent. And we encourage the parents up there and also siblings too. And my kids help a lot with camp, so they've even learned themselves. So especially my older kids, you know, if I'm out with them alone, I want one of my kids to know what to do if something happens to me, if I get a hit on the head and I'm not conscious, you know. So
well, and I would think too, even though yes, it's the aspects of physically knowing how to deal with the disease, but I would think it could potentially be a very isolating disease when you're a kid, because I mean, I just think about myself as a mom, and I'm always like, stop, be careful, don't, you might fall, you might. I mean, I think that's just, you know, as a mom, that you just want to keep your kiddos safe. So that's got to be even more stressful for a parent whose child has a blood disorder.
Yeah, it can be. And we see that with parents all the time. That's one of the nice things about bringing them to a camp is that we can also show them to guys like me that are there, we're being active. We got through that.
Yeah.
Part of being a teenager with a bleeding disorder, and we're okay. A big part of that is being active. Don't sit down and waste away because you have this disorder. What's really going to get you through life is being physically active, mentally active, and participating in life.
Yeah. It doesn't define who you are.
Don't let it define who you are.
When is the camp every year?
So we hold it in June. This year it's about the third week in June.
Okay.
And people
can find it online.
They can go to idahoblood.org to find more information about when camp is.
And Barbara, we're running out of time, but you wanted to tell me about your upcoming fundraiser, just because the name itself is great.
It is, and it fits with our mission.
Mm-hmm.
We are having the Bloody Mary Mix-Off on April 20th. We've got 6 bars that will be mixing Bloody Marys. And you can come in, $35. You can try them all and have a brunch. And then you get to vote on who's the best.
And you're doing it for a good cause. Bloody Marys and brunch. There's nothing better than that, right?
You got it.
I want to thank both of you for coming in today. My guest, Barbara Fawcett, the executive director of the Idaho chapter of the National Hemophilia Foundation, and Zach Walker, director of Camp Sunrise. Thank you so much. Or Camp Red Sunrise, correct?
Correct.
All right.